Magic can sometimes seem exotic and mysterious, hidden in the far-flung lands and in dusty books.
Some of it's right here with us, in the church aisles, the graveyard, even at our kitchen tables. With roots in African sorcery, folk Christianity, native lore, and European magic, the tradition known as hoodoo, conjure, and root work is distinctly American.
And we have dedicated ourselves to the preservation and practice of this living tradition. I'm Dean, a Chicagoland spiritualist and root worker.
And I'm Dr. Hobb, a two-headed Southern country.
And this is Lamplighter Blues.
I'm sitting here broke, and I ain't got a dime. You all could put something in these dukes of mine, but don't put that thing on me.
Welcome back to Lamplighter Blues. We are continuing our discussion on hoodoo curios today.
We had quite a few of them, so we figure we'll break this up. We actually have enough for like two more episodes. So depending on how these go, we'll see if you guys are up for round three and round four. But we wanted to start just kind of right off the gate. If you are looking to learn more about dressing and how-tos, check out the episode before this. But we want to start with Saint medallions because it's something that you'll see a lot because it's very common to have Catholics carry around Saint medallions.
Right, and like we talked about, we're not going to get into great detail because, of course, we had our show we recorded with Papa Newt about Saint work, and this sort of falls back on that. But Saint medals you will find either in more Catholic oriented conjure workers or a lot more modern workers who even though like I personally was raised Protestant and I still have a St. Christopher that I dress and use on a pretty regular basis among other things. And these medals come up fairly often and whether they're dressed with Van Van or holy water, depending on who you're working with, they are being used. And a lot of times their use will have to do with the particular saint that they depict.
And these vary in difficulty of getting your hands on, too. If it's something very common, such as he had mentioned, St. Christopher, St. Anthony, St. Jude, that sort of thing, those medals you can go to any Catholic store, and they will have boxes of them.
Sure. If you're looking for a Michael, it's going to be much, much simpler to find.
Right.
Than if you're looking for something very obscure, like a St. Cyprian, who is popular in the business, but not so much with everybody else, or some of the folk saints as well. That aren't necessarily recognized by the church. Even though St. Christopher, for instance, is no longer recognized by the church classically, he has been dropped from the list of recognized saints because they can't historically determine if he actually existed or not. But you'll find more obscure folk saints, Dr. Jose Gregorio Hernandez, the Venerable Talbot, who has not been canonized fully as a saint yet, been recognized. But you will find those occasionally. They're a little harder to find, but they can be very handy.
And when you find these real popular ones, such as the St. Michael or Michael the Archangel, they normally come in a lot of different types of things. For instance, when Hob was last up here, we had found quite a few St. Michael coins I thought was just the coolest damn things, man.
Yeah, those were neat. And there's all kinds of little charms you can find.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the idea that the Catholics are fairly comfortable with iconography, where the Protestants had a big protest, and a lot of that had to do with their protest against Catholicism, this sort of abandonment of any sort of iconic objects, a lot of the departure from that sort of Catholic use of imagery. Catholics are fond of imagery, so you'll find a lot of these objects that you can use.
Yeah, and don't worry too much about your uncanonized saints and thing. They bought all those boxes full of the medals. They're going to sell them until they're out.
Sure, and St. Christopher, whatever the church says, St. Christopher is still one of the most popular saints in the world. The Pope can say whatever he wants to say. So.
Yeah, and you'll find these a lot hanging from people's rearview mirrors and things. Because being a traveling saint, it comes up quite a bit.
Right.
Keychains also. That would be very popular to have. But anyhow, moving on. The next thing we want to talk about is evil eye beads.
Evil eye beads. These are another importation that came in from Europe, European practices and Middle Eastern practices both. A lot of times these are usually little blue glass beads that are shaped like eyes. These are anywhere that has an aspect of the evil eye, which is pretty much every culture on the planet, has some
American apparently.
I want to say even Native American practices had something like the evil eye.
Oh, that's interesting. I
could be wrong, but that seems like I read about that. But pretty much any practice, any place, culture that had something like the evil eye, what we think of as the evil eye, Which apparently the very first reference to the Evil Eye ever is Greek. It actually came from the Voyage of the Argo. It was actually used by a good guy to kill a villain. Interesting sort of concept there.
That's quite wild.
But any place that has an evil eye have something specifically to avoid it. And these eye beads were one of the things you find most commonly used now all over. And they're just blue glass beads that are dressed. And you wear them where they can be seen. You'll often see them incorporated into jewelry, earrings, finger rings, necklaces, bracelets, that sort of thing. You want them where the eye can be seen. And it just is there to protect and repel the evil eye.
And if you happen to know any particular jewelers that are Greek, they will have some of these that are amazingly elaborate things, you know, ones that you can buy that are 24 karat gold that surround the bead. And it's really interesting to see them, because when you look at them, you know, you have this piece of jewelry that's worth hundreds and hundreds of dollars with what looks like this chintzy little glass eye on it. But, you know, it's something that's deeply incorporated into their culture. There's a place over by where I live that is entirely run by Greeks, and everyone that takes money will have an evil eye charm.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask them about them, they'll go, oh, it's just a Greek thing. Don't worry about it. And then they'll see my bracelet. They'll be like, you're not Greek. What the hell's going on with you?
Right. Another item you'll see used commonly in the same way as the Hansa hand. It's just it's a little charm made to look like a hand with an eye in the back. An eye carved into the back of the hand. That's one you'll see also used for the same purpose a lot. And really, any sort of jewelry with an eye or an eye look to it can be used in the same way to repel the evil eye.
And the Hansa hands, those were held over cribs and strollers and things, right, over the children as they'd be moved through the world?
Mm-hmm. You'll find bigger ones, too, that aren't jewelry. You'll find the big ones like that are meant to be hung on walls and for that kind of purpose.
Oh, okay. I just remember there was a lot of talk. I can't remember. I might have been on one of the Lucky Mojo shows. They were talking about how with children it was particularly important within these cultures to protect them because they were so easily affected by it.
And they're very common targets. If you had someone in the town who was jealous of your kids or jealous of your well-being, children are a really common target. And they could be evil-eyed. I mean, there are cultures where they won't even accept compliments of their children. You know, if someone compliments their child, they'll refuse the compliment, you know, just kind of play it off, refuse it. And in some cultures, they'll go so far as to actually spit when someone compliments them and their kids like that to drive off these sort of false, these ingenuous compliments that could be carrying an evil eye sort of curse.
And I remember too, I think it was Ollie had mentioned that when, in certain cultures, when you would give compliments like that, there were certain phrases that would go along that basically say, I mean this from my heart, and in God's name, you know, this brings no curse.
Right, exactly. That just gives you an indication of how common and how concerned people could be about this sort of behavior.
And how deeply entrenched in their culture it is.
Yes, that they would have to have these sort of code, these sort of passphrases that show that their comments are sincere and don't bear, you know, this thing that's going to destroy your family. It just comes back to what we've talked about before, how sadly eager people are to torment one another or to cause harm to someone who has something they don't.
Yeah, we may do an entire show over evil eye and evil eye protections, because it's something that comes up quite a bit.
Yeah, we might have to discuss, we might have to look into some of our venerable elders in the tradition to join us for that one.
Yeah, I imagine we could find a couple. All right, well, let's move on to the possibly not well-known but incredibly infamous nutmeg charm.
Oh, the infamous nutmeg charm. Okay, the reason it's the infamous nutmeg charm, this is apparently an extremely lucky charm. It's reputed to be able to be very successful as far as bringing luck, for gambling luck, and to bring money in through the less than wholesome means. But the reason it's referred to, the reason we call it infamous, it is a term a lot of people won't make because it can be hazardous to make. It can be hazardous to dispose of. It's a nutmeg that's taken, that's hollowed out and filled with mercury. It's filled with quicksilver and usually sealed over with wax and carried that way. It's a very, very traditional lucky charm. I don't make them. because I don't like playing with mercury. Well, I do like playing with mercury, but not like that. And mercury, of course, quicksilver is toxic. It is toxic to touch. It is toxic for the environment. It's very, very problematic for groundwater and all that sort of thing. It's just not a good thing to play around with. And for that same reason, a lot of workers just don't build these things anymore. They were very, very common once upon a time. They were very, very popular once upon a time. And you'll still occasionally have people looking for them. And a lot of ethical workers just won't build them anymore, mostly because of health and environmental hazards. But it is something worth mentioning. It is part of the tradition. And it's one of those things that will occasionally pop up from time to time. And you will have fine people that are making them still, but I don't recommend carrying one. I don't recommend making them. We just wanted to mention it mostly as a historical aside.
Right. Now, we can't stress enough that mercury, quicksilver, whatever you want to call it, is absorbed through the skin, and that wax is probably not good enough to seal it inside it, or even the nut itself may very well be porous. You know, if you're going to be containing mercury, you need it to be in glass.
Yeah, and to give you an idea of how toxic mercury can be, the whole idea of the Mad Hatter actually came from Hatter's Madness in Victorian England. Because mercury was used as part of the curing process for felt that were used to make these hats, and it would drive people insane as they would absorb this through their skin, and they would die really unpleasant deaths.
The Lewis Carroll.
Yeah, that's where the whole idea of the Mad Hatter came from. It's not a pretty thing, and it's not something I recommend people screw around with.
Yeah. So, bear that in mind and realize if, you're looking for something like that, that most people won't do it, and that you're taking your life in your own hands. Because once that stuff gets in you, I'm pretty sure there's not many ways of getting it out of you.
Just time. And you'll hear that, this reason you hear pregnant women are recommended not to eat large predatory seafood.
Oh, yeah, tuna fish and stuff.
Heavy tuna, sharks, swordfish, that sort of thing, because big fish do collect mercury in their tissues. Most fish have mercury in the tissues because it does exist naturally. And the big ones eat so many little fish that it condenses, and they live so long before they're harvested that kind of mercury can come up. And it can heavy metal, it's heavy metal poisoning.
Right.
Just like you can get from lead and other things.
Yeah. Well, with that, we can move on to something a little bit sunnier. Which is gator feet.
Gator feet.
We talked gator a little
bit,
claws.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about gator paws in the previous episode when we talked about rabbit's feet. And gator feet are used in a similar way. They're sort of to reach out and grab and keep money. They could be used for sort of aggressive money stay with me or money drawing work. They could be used for gambling. A lot of times you'll see a gator paw incorporated into a mojo for gamblers or just carried by itself as a pocket piece. You dress it with something like red fast luck or money drawing or attraction oil. They're weird little things. I've got one in my bone set. It's kind of a funny little thing.
And they look very strange, but one of the interesting things about them is same thing with chicken feet is if you steam them or you apply water to them in a certain way, or if you have them, fresh enough where they're not dried yet, you can mold them and shape them to like hold coins or hold dice, and then when they harden or dry out, they will hold that thing, and it is, you can't get it out without breaking it.
A lot of times you can just soak them in, a lot of times like with chicken feet, you'll just soak them in usually kind of a mild herb tea, and they'll soften if you leave them to soak long enough. It's just like anything else. You just sort of steep it for a little while, and it softens up enough that it becomes pliable again. And yeah, like you said, you can mold it around a dime. A mercury dime is pretty common. Like we talked about mercury dimes before. You can mold around mercury dimes or lucky dice and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And they can kind of hang on to it for you. You can sort of aim it at what you want to use it for. Sort of train it to do what you want.
And like you were saying, too, with the gator feet, it seems to have more of an aggressive type of feel to it. It's got a lot more strength and oomph when you're shaping it, where the chicken foot seems to be a little bit... softer is the word I'll use.
Well, since we're talking about chicken feet, we can go into them a little bit. Chicken feet a lot of times are used to uncross. They can actually be used to take off things because, chickens will dig up and dispose of tricks that are laid in your yard. So a chicken foot can be used the same way. It can actually be used almost the way you'd use an egg for an egg cleansing, where you can start at someone's head and kind of work your way down and lightly scratch as you go down and sort of drive off these tricks that someone may be carrying around.
See, and I had never heard of that until I talked to Papa Newt. Mm-hmm. And that's apparently something that he loves.
I'm going to have to... I'd heard a little bit about it, and then since we've been plugging it endlessly, Mama Star's new book, volume one of the Conjure workbook, she has a chapter devoted to the use of chicken feet in this way. And it sold me on it. I'm gonna see about getting me a hold of me a chicken foot or two, because it seems like an awfully neat way to go about doing that sort of work.
That's really interesting. I'd never heard, you know, because you hear about the, was it the frazzled black hen?
The black frizzled hen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that will go around, like you're saying, and dispose of tricks. So it already had that association with me, but mm-hmm. I never thought of using chicken feet specifically for that.
Yeah, I'd read about it, but I guess it's something I just sort of read and filed away until I read Mama Star's book, and it really, she speaks very, very glowingly about the use.
Gotcha. Well, you know, it's something to keep a look at or look out for. Finding these particular types of curios, and you're talking about actual animal parts, you'd be surprised if you live in like a farming community how often, you know, these animals go out to slaughter. Gators might be a little bit harder, but if you live in the South, people eat gator, so they have gator feet.
Gator feet, you're usually going to have to buy as curios, as near as I can tell. All the ones I've seen are small. Are very, very small. Now, gator teeth are easy to find because gators shed their teeth. So you'll find those sort of teeth a lot. You go to, especially around Florida, you'll find them, those little, like, gift shops and stuff just full of these things. Gator feet, I've always bought as curios. The one I've got in mind came from Lucky Mojo. I don't know how easy they are to find. Chicken feet are ridiculously easy to find in that I can go walk into any butcher shop probably in my little community and buy them by the box full. Hell, they probably give them to me just to get them out of the way.
Yeah. So
chicken feet, not hard to find.
And once again, you'll be that weird guy.
Yeah. Why do you keep coming in? This is the third time this week you come in for chicken feet. Yeah. And chicken feet will decompose. You do have to dry them if you're going to use them as curios. Pack them in rock salt for, you know, a few weeks and leave them alone. That sort of thing. They dry pretty quick. They're mostly just gristle. Not much to them. You can kind of shape them. You can kind of shape them how you want before you pack them and dry them out.
Right.
There's always that thing, how comfortable you are at handling animal parts. It's certainly not something you have to do the work. But it is something that is used.
And you'll find that there's some people that get a lot of joy out of it. I don't know particularly why, but...
Whatever floats your boat, I suppose.
Yeah. So it's just, I think some people find them exceptionally effective. And it's something that seems to be very unique to hoodoo, that these animal curios just seem to entrance people.
You'll find animal curios, a lot of times animal parts, animal components used in a lot of folk magic.
Yeah.
It just comes down to the fact that in folk practice, which is to say, you know, sort of down-home practice, animals die. You know, whether they're eating animals or whatever, whether you lose a rooster to a weasel or you kill a chicken for dinner, or butcher a cow or a pig or whatever.
You got extra parts?
Animal parts are around, you know, and it's just... sort of part of the, it's something that comes up in that sort of life.
Yeah, I think that might be something that is kind of unique to the city folks, and too, where you find people who are really, really far removed from their food that have a serious problem with it, and then you find people who live out that have, you know, slaughtered their own pigs, chickens, etc., and they seem to have no problem with it because it's just a fact of life.
Right. When your first thought about where meat comes from is the grocery store, you know, you're a step removed.
And yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I don't live in the city, but I don't live, you know, I don't live in the country as much as I did when I was a little kid, when I was growing up. But, you know, I very distinctly remember being a little kid and helping pluck chickens, you know, after my dad had cut the head off a chicken and let it run around for a minute to bleed out. You know, I very distinctly remember the smell, you know, you'd get when you dunk a fresh chicken in a pot of boiling water to scald the feathers off, and then having to pull the rest of the feathers off before you can prepare it. You know, these are just things that you get removed from. My wife grew up raising beef cattle, you know, so she got to see that sort of thing.
And, right.
You know, it's just something that happens.
You start meeting cattle named hamburger and T-bone and stuff like that.
Right. So it's, you know, our food was walking around once upon a time. And
right.
That's part of something we have to come to grips with.
Yep, definitely something to keep in mind when you have these animal parts.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll move on to something that sounds like an animal part but is actually not, which is the bat nut.
Bat nuts are neat. They're very, very sinister looking little things.
Are horrifying to look at. They really are.
Bat nuts, also called a devil pod. It's a little seed pod. It's native to China, where it's called a ling nut, I believe. And it's in China, if you turn it one way, it looks like a little bat with its wings like it's in flight. And in China, bats, good luck. So it was used as a good luck charm, a lot like we would use a rabbit's foot. And it's prepared a little bit like you would a buckeye, where it's sort of dried and oiled to give it a little sheen and to help keep it, to help preserve it. In the South, where I'm from, it's usually referred to as a devil nut or a devil's
devil pod.
Devil pod. And if you turn it the other way, it looks like a sort of a traditional sort of goat horn devil face.
Yeah.
So it's a little more sinister, and it's used to guard against cross conditions. It's used to scare off things that might otherwise come in and cause problems. A lot of times it'd either be carried as a pocket piece wrapped in red flannel or actually mounted above your door, facing out like a little guard, and it was put there to sort of frighten stuff off.
Yeah, and the traditions of keeping scary things by your doors.
Right, to fight scary things with scarier things. You know, it's just right. That... which appeals greatly to me. I mean, it's just my personality.
Yeah, it's something I'm definitely going to try and start using a little bit more. I really like them now that I actually have one, and mm-hmm. I definitely plan on putting it at the lintel. But
It reminds me a lot of there's a series of entities in Tibetan Buddhist practice called the Wrath. They're the Dharmapala, the Dharma protectors, and they're a series of what are referred to as wrathful deities. And they're these, you'll see the paintings, and especially in Tibetan temple paintings, these sort of horrific, demonic figures, multi-armed, multi-eyed, with flames and necklaces of skulls and things like yeah. that. And these are actually wrathful figures. These were demons who were converted by these Buddhist saints, these bodhisattvas or various things, and became protectors of the tradition. So you'll see them a lot of the times, you'll see statues of them or paintings of them at the entrances to temples. And they serve the same sort of purpose. They're there to drive off other things and to protect against other things. So this is a very similar practice. And you'll find this sort of practice used a lot. Same reason we see lions and gargoyles and stuff on buildings and statuary.
Very very interesting history behind a lot of this stuff. It's so wild how something from China gets incorporated into a purely American practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a big interest in things that were considered to be foreign. That's where we get Chinese wash from. That's where you have the images of the Buddha statue and stuff on the Lucky Buddha products, and that imagery that was used in a lot of the sort of the classic, the heyday of catalog house hoodoo practices.
Yeah.
These things seemed, both Hinduism and Buddhism both seemed very, very exotic, and you'll find these things that were imported and used a great deal and became a fundamental part of traditional conjure practice, even in the rural South.
Yeah. It's just so neat that there's, a little bit of everything.
Well, that's America for you.
There you go.
That's nature is a collection of a lot of different cultures, a lot of different things. Whether we're using them correctly or not, as far as in their original cultural context, we absorbed a lot of things. The idea of the cliche of America as a melting pot rings very, very true. And hoodoo as a fundamentally American practice really typifies that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's throw one more. It'll probably take us a little bit out, probably to the end of the show. The railroad spike.
Railroad spikes. Well, you're very fond of railroad spikes, so why don't you hit this one off?
All right. Railroad spikes can be used for quite a few things. The thing that I use them for the most is helping people nail down their house, as they resemble large nails. And again, they're made of iron, and we talk about iron constantly on the show. You can use it to set up sort of a fortification. And with this curio, you'd collect four of them, go to the four ports of your property, and then hammer them down. And people will sometimes attach other curios to them, things like silver dimes, so that your property isn't closed but also protected from tricks, or even to draw in money. You could put Indian head pennies to give you a warning if there's troubles coming, give you that little tingle in the back of your neck, something's coming up. Sometimes they'll even be dressed before they're put into the ground. I'm pretty fond of dressing them in fiery wall of protection, or even reversal if someone's directly under attack and you're trying to put up a barrier between you and them. Kind of a nastier barrier, I guess.
No, you just want it to bite back.
Right. So that's what I use them mostly for, but you can use them for quite a few things. What are some of the other things you use them for, Hub?
That's primarily what I use them for. So, like I said, being iron, the idea of being able to hold a thing down. I've used them for any kind of situation that could be possibly changeable that you want to hold in a enviable position. I've had people use them to nail down their jobs after tumble tick work, where they're able to get their job kind of to a comfortable place where they want it to be at and use it to nail that down. I've seen them used to keep someone from straying from home, where you just kind of...
Well, that's an interesting idea.
The idea of kind of holding someone down. I've seen them used along with... most of them you see nails used in the same way. The idea of nailing someone's foot track down.
That's kind of brutal.
can
I've
be.
Actually used them to make really big devil traps, where I take 9 double shoestrings and wrap it around the spike, and then you can, even before you do that, wrap it first in like Spanish moss and then wrap it around so it has a real tangled feel to it, but you have this spike that's, you know, bam, as soon as you get caught in this, you are here now.
Mm-hmm. And again, it comes back to the iron. I know we work iron to death. It's something we mention all the time.
It's so cool, though.
It is, iron does have such a, you'll find so many objects, iron objects, you know, used in magic overall. And iron's just kind of where it's at. It has a lot of uses. It's a very, very powerful object. And has a lot of earthy grounding concepts. That's really what you can do down with something like a spike or a strong iron object, is that you're grounding or really anchoring a thing.
Right. And I'll tell you, you know, these things have become a hell of a lot more popular recently with people losing their houses and these foreclosures.
Yes, the massive thing we've had with foreclosures on houses. A lot of people have been turning towards this kind of work to hold on to their homes.
Yeah, and I've seen really solid results from it.
Yeah, we'd be remiss mentioning Railroad Spikes, not to mention Auntie Cindy Toto, who does some very, very pretty... sort of work.
Oh, yeah, she dresses
spikes.
Them up.
Yeah, she dresses them up very, very beautifully, and we will try to include a link in the show notes to her gallery of her spikes she makes.
Yeah, she has a lot, and I believe she even custom makes them for folks, right?
To my knowledge, she will custom make them to order, including incorporating your own personal concerns and things into them.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you're going to be talking about that, too, if you're going to... nail down your house and you're trying to keep it absolutely as yours, using personal concerns such as urine is pretty common as well.
Mm-hmm. Marking your territory. Yeah. Very, 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 very primal sort of thing there.
So you would mix that in over the spike, or, you know, anoint the tip of the spike and then drive it into the ground so you don't actually have to, you know, handle your own urine or where someone else is.
Sure. We always seem to wind up talking about pee in this show. Something about it.
That's a nature of hoodoo, man. There's nature of hoodoo. Sometimes you gotta pull the wisdom tooth out of a piece of mail.
A lot of urine, a lot of menstrual blood. Just can't get away from it.
Oh man, that's gonna be a horrifying show later on.
we'll have to get a good company. We'll have to get good company for that show. to help make it a little more presentable.
Hopefully a woman would probably soften that blow.
That would be most appropriate, since we're both obviously not in that sort of territory outside of what we can talk about. We can speak to that purely from the theoretical position, so we need a little help with that show, I'm afraid.
Which is to say, gentlemen, don't accept anything that you can't see through from a woman that may have...
Whose intentions you're not sure about.
Interest.
Yeah. Pour your own coffee, or just wait till you get home and skip the spaghetti sauce.
Skip the spaghetti sauce. be careful of an open Coke, etc.
Right.
Yeah. Well, with that, I think we've actually gotten to the close of another show. So you got anything else to add?
I don't think so. We seem to, again, we've just hit the surface of this. We've talked about a few of the more popular objects. There are a whole bunch more, so we'll see if we're going to run with more of these. I imagine we'll space that a little bit. It's a topic we'll get back to someday.
Yeah. And, I actually think in a show just on lodestones would be fantastic.
Yeah, lodestones is one we hadn't touched on, so they probably, given the nature of how widely lodestones are used, that would probably be a good one to save for a show of its own.
Yeah.
So you can expect to see that one coming soon. And again, like we said last episode, if you have objects of your own that you want to hear about or let us know about, do drop us an email or hit us on Twitter and let us know about it.
Yep, we are at LamplighterBlue on Twitter, LamplighterBlues@gmail.com, and LamplighterBlues.wordpress.com.
Yep.
So we can be found almost anywhere.
Yeah, we are all over the place.
Yeah. I'll see if I can hit the Twitter a little bit more. And we may be writing up some stuff time and again for the blog, but honestly, we have so many other things. You might just want to hit us up on our own blogs and check that for the show notes.
Yeah, we will be. We will try to get keep the show notes up to date. So we've talked about a lot of stuff. We'll try to make sure that any books or
folks we mention
or books we recommend or anything like that, we will try to make sure we have up on the show notes.
All right, and with that, let's head over to Secondhand Hoodoo. Hey, folks, we're going to take this opportunity where our promo slot normally goes to talk about the summer contest giveaway. We are giving away some books, free reading, and some of my oils to any listener who takes part in the contest. We have started up a new Facebook page. We put a post up on our WordPress page as well. We also purchased the domain lamplighterblues.com, so you no longer have to slide that WordPress in there anymore. You can just go right to lamplighterblues.com. But if you jump over to that page, you'll notice a new post there that explains the giveaway. Mostly what we're looking for is people to leave us iTunes reviews, which are the most important, because those get us better coverage when people are using iTunes, so that when they're putting our name in or searching for things like Conjure, Hoodoo, etc. on iTunes, our name comes up alongside everybody else's, and hopefully with some good reviews, people might decide to take a look at ours, as well as any of the other great podcasts that are out there. So that's like the most important thing. And we give you two contest entries for that. And then sharing our Facebook page, liking our Facebook page, sharing our WordPress page, all of those good things, if you can do, we will give you entries into the contest. Only the iTunes thing is worth two. The only thing you absolutely have to do is if you do any of those things, you have to let us know somehow. We have a lot of people that are jumping on the page that are giving us retweets and everything, and that is awesome. But we need to know how to get a hold of you if you're going to enter the contest. So if you could send us an email at lamplighterblues@gmail.com. That goes to both of us, so either myself or Dr. Howe will get back to you, so you'll know that you've been entered and that we have your name, and then you can tell us what you have done so that we can double-check and all that other good stuff. So once you have shared to your heart's content and done all the reblogging you can do, then hit us up with that email and we'll get you entered in. At the our September show, we'll be doing the drawings at random. And we'll announce your name on the air, or whatever name you give us. If you don't want us to say your name, include that in the email. That would be spiffy. And then we'll get you your prizes as soon as we can. Remember, it's going to be an in-depth reading with Dr. Hobb. It's going to be 3 to 4 of my oils, which will be probably at random. You'll can expect some Van Van and probably some Chronic Success, because the ones I think that I do the best at. And the two books, one by Deacon Millett and the other by Catherine Ironwood, which is the Sweetening Spells and the Hoodoo Candle Magic books. So both really awesome books, pretty much brand new. So hopefully you can win it here before you have to go and buy it. You may have also noticed that we changed our intro. If you guys could give us some feedback on that, if you like the old one better or you enjoyed this one, that would be awesome too. So with that, we will move on to Secondhand Hoodoo. See you there. All right, welcome back to Secondhand Hoodoo. We have our guest once again, the Madam Nadia from MadamNadia.com.
Hello, hello.
And we have Hob.
Yep, still here.
We haven't lost you yet. So you've already been on the show once, so we won't have to explain anything to you. So we'll jump right into it. Our first item is an antique iron. This is one of those types of irons that you would set on the old school stoves, and you would heat up just so that you could iron clothes for a little bit until you had to put it back on the stove. I'll send you the picture of it so you get a good chance to take a look at it. But really, there's not a whole lot to it. I mean, you're talking a flat iron surface, but hey, it's iron, and a wooden handle.
Nice. And I bet that puppy is heavy as hell.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Anything with that much iron, it's got to have some weight to it.
Well, looking at that, I have sort of a couple of hits right away. One thing, I think for some reason, justice work. I have no, ironing things, making things straight, making things work well for you. And the other one, of course, is crushing enemies. So enemies. You can, you know, load your candle, have a figural candle, even like a ceramic doll baby, an egg, something that represents your enemy. You'll do work on it, and then in the end, you just take this fucker and you crush it. But going back to ironing, I wonder how much you could do with that. Like, really, if a situation is complicated, maybe taking a string and ironing it to make it straight, like if there is a couple who is involved in some sort of relationship and the situation is complicated, ironing that out, you know, opening the road for them. So opening a road to success, taking it without it being hot, and maybe putting sand or earth, maybe actual earth from a place, and then ironing through it, creating a path, and then working with it in order for your clients to have a straight shot at what they want.
That's pretty spiffy. I definitely like the string being ironed out flat so that you have a straight and narrow instead of a convoluted path to what you're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Hob, what do you got? This one's a little weird, huh?
No, for once, I actually didn't go to the scariest possible option.
wow.
The first thing I had come to mind, since the iron is such a domestic item,
mm-hmm.
would be something like either using it for house cleansings or for house protection.
That's
or even for even really sort of heavy-handed peaceful homework, you know, sort of like the way
like a frying pan upside the head peaceful home.
Well, think about it. Sort of like the rosemary work you'll see done, where you put the wife or mother in charge of the home. I can see you using an old iron in that way as well. But I would think that you could use it for being both iron and a very very domestic item that you could use it as part of a aggressive sort of house exorcism or house cleansing. Really, really efficiently as an actual visual sort of something you would actually pass through rooms with, something you would actually use to smooth out the house itself to actually put things back to right again.
That's kind of wild. I may have to get you one of these just so I can watch you use it.
I want to
see that too.
I'm pretty sure I could come up with a way to incorporate that into a place that has some bad going on that you could go through there and sort of set things right again.
Well. Well, what the first thing that came to mind with this for me was to sort of like what Nadia was saying, but instead of using string, actually take a photo or a petition paper. Petition paper will probably work a lot better than a photo, because if you actually iron a photo, it'll probably smoke it. But you could take it, and if, like she was saying, the situation was really complicated, to kind of crumple that thing up into a ball and then take the iron while you're praying and kind of reciting over it and ironing it flat, taking the wrinkles and stuff out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So, but otherwise, I mean, I was looking at this thing and I was like, damn, I don't know what I'm going to do with that.
Well, you know, thinking about, I mean, it's not really hoodoo, but thinking about African diasporic religions, iron is sacred to Ogun. And Ogun is all about technology. So I'm wondering if you could even set it on your workspace or something like that to have power over technology, helping you with things like that. And actually, ironing or melting things, because if you would put wax under a parchment paper and you heat up this thing, you put it, you know, on top of the parchment paper, it will warm up the wax.
Oh, and draw it into the parchment paper. That's one of them tricks to get wax out of your carpet.
Wax out of your carpet, but what if you put, let's say, two people, you know, together, and put some wax in between that, and then the pictures, and then the parchment paper, what's going to happen is that the wax is going to melt and bring those people together, so you can use it instead of glue. And you can put maybe some oil or something, you know, or some herbs, and just sort of wax them together to each other. And that's it. I mean, they're good. Mm.
Oh man, that totally just blew my mind. I have like a million things I want to do with this thing.
since we're looking at inspirations outside of hoodoo, one that may I think of a little bit, there's a practice in powwow where you take a little iron charm on a handle and you actually will smoke it in a candle until it collects soot, and you'll press it onto a place on the body that has a problem. So you'll stamp this sort of soot mark on the part of the body you're healing. And
beautiful.
Not that you necessarily heat the iron, because I'm not sure you'd have any way to sort of etch a sign into it, but I can see using it to sort of smooth out complaints.
And then, of course, you can do that, the same thing, the same idea, but for divination, because you can press it onto something, and you will have a mark, and then you can read that mark.
Yeah, not necessarily using the iron for that, but to use the iron as a healing implement as well. Of course, you'd have to have a fairly sturdy conjure to do it, because you don't want to. If you're using this thing like a chicken foot or like a candle for an egg cleansing, just kind of to smooth out these rough spots, you don't want to brain your client with it if you can't keep a hold of the thing. But just coming from that thought, I think you could probably use it the same way, where you could actually use it to sort of smooth out these disruptions in someone's body to drive off. Either lingering complaints or negativity, almost like a like you would an egg cleansing.
So what about putting it on your altar just as a icon, perhaps fixing it by itself with something like Master Key oil, or you know, even like Master Root oil, so that when you're doing conjure, you get the wrinkles out?
Yeah, you know,
like to help you aim, so to speak.
You know, to keep yourself level, to keep yourself sort of in control.
Yeah.
You can always set a big-ass lodestone on it. I mean, iron, right? And feed it.
That would be neat.
Well, it being such a strongly domestic, again, I know I'll come back to that, but it's such a strongly domestic item. It'd be a good locus for something like a house prosperity. This sort of really, really heavy grounded foundation to build on a house prosperity spell, like a big lodestone, draw money in.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
And if you inherited from your ancestors, that would be
cooler. That'd just be the bee's knees there, wouldn't it?
Oh my God, we all need to get one. Where is the old people? Give us some irons. We need some.
Yeah. Well, you know, I see these things all the time. If you go to any like antique sale, you see them, and so it's what kind of jogged my memory, because when you look for antique pictures online, you'll see these more than you see anything else.
Sure, it's something that we don't use anymore, so they've just become quiche. You know, it's just something that's kind of hanging around.
Right. Well, that's sort of the fun part about this particular segment.
Exactly.
Remember the other episode where we were talking about the glass?
Uh-huh.
So what if you shatter the glass with the iron?
There you go.
That would be like a horrible, whatever the reverse of Happy Home is, I guess, Angry Home.
Oh, God,
to freaking
yeah.
Take this thing, put somebody's picture on it, like your husband's picture if you're angry at him, and throw it through a prison glass.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Done at midnight at a crossroads. You could probably get some shit done that way.
I'm going to get one. That's it.
Oh, God. Well, tell your husband I apologize.
He'll be looking for you, honey. He'll be looking for you.
Yeah. All right, well, do you have time for one more? We could do the old classic double shot now.
Okay, let's do it, let's do it.
All right, so our next item is even stranger than the rest. It is an antique ear trumpet. If you don't know what an ear trumpet is, that's totally acceptable. I will explain it to you.
This one's one I'm about to put a picture of when we talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the old school hearing aids. They would carry around these brass trumpets, stick it in their ear, and it's like a reverse megaphone, basically.
Yeah, just to help someone hear. You'll see a lot of old black and white movies or old cartoons, I think, of. You see a lot of ear trumpets.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
So. I already have an idea what to do about it.
Excellent.
It's sort of around, like, you know, how sometimes you want to be a fly on the wall and you want to know what people are doing or talking about you. So you can kind of combine it with stop gossip, but also so you know exactly what's being said.
So, like, clarity, stop gossip?
Clarity, stop gossip. You know, I want to hear what you bitches are saying about me kind of thing. So, you know, I would just work it as a almost like a ritual piece. You could do that. You can probably smoke incense in that thing.
Oh, yeah.
You could use it as a smudger of sorts, even walking around and putting incense in that. I just think that it's a fabulously shaped, little, interesting item.
Oh, yeah. I saw it, and I was like, oh, I got to throw that thing, because Well, I'll let Hob do his first, and I'll say what I thought.
All right. First thing I came up with was the idea of using it in something like moving candle spells, either for court case work, where you want to make sure that your voice is being heard, or you want to make sure that your argument is more persuasive.
Ah, I like that.
Or using it in reconciliation work, where communication's an issue in the relationship, why it failed in the first place, or why the issues have arisen, and sort of using it as a central piece that you move things closer to sort of to build the clarity or build communication, to restore communication. And like Nadia said, using it almost as a smudger where you could blow incense through it to sort of encourage that communication to be restored or that clarity of understanding to be restored.
I love that. I think that this is genius because how many times the main issue in relationship is that people feel like they're not being heard, right?
Sure,
right.
A whole lot. I mean, communication really seems to be a big issue with a lot of these failed relationships.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I love it.
When I was looking at this thing, the first thing I thought of was using it in like a business deal of like actually having someone's ear. You know, you really want to hear what I have to tell you because, you know, this is going to be the thing that's going to be the next, you know, big whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's kind of the thought I have with the court case work is really getting their attention, really, really encouraging them to listen to what you got.
So screaming into that thing.
That's kind of an interesting idea, that too. You know, because then you could use it as that focal point where you're saying your psalm or whatever, and you're saying it directly into it as if to, like, put it into someone's head. So, like, actually heating up the tip and sticking it into a skull candle's ear and letting it
remelt. Exactly the same image. Beautiful.
Me too.
Love it.
Me too. Oh, all three. I think all three of us got that.
So where are we going to buy that, too, with the iron? Because I think it's just two beautiful altar pieces. Yeah. We just...
I went right back to what we were talking about with the glass panes, the idea of tormenting some poor skull candle with this thing. just shouting in it and just, you know, screaming and shouting into it and sort of driving someone a little off the edge.
We are going to help Lucky Mojo sell so many skull candles.
The way I know our dear teacher, Kat Ironwood, she's going to find those earpieces, like, and she's going to be selling them too because she knows where to find things like that. I trust her.
There'll be a sale on ear trumpets, antique ear trumpets.
We weren't expecting such a rush. Well, all right. Does anyone else have anything to add to this, or are we just pretty much thinking about sticking it in skull candles now?
That's kind of what I'm at. That's,
I love that.
That seems like a lot of fun.
Excellent. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Nadia. It has been an absolute pleasure, as always, to talk to you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, with that, we will see you guys next time.
Till next time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Lamplighter Blues. Our show can be found at iTunes and lamplighterblues.wordpress.com.
You can also reach us via Twitter at lamplighterblue, that's with no S, or at lamplighterblues@gmail.com. Until next time.
Don't put that thing on me. Don't put that thing on me, 'cause I'm going back to tennis.